It's time for the Ron and Brian podcast. Get ready to fill your ears with the latest news, politics, current events, and whatever else we feel like talking about this week. And now, your hosts, Ron and Brian.
All right. Good evening, everybody. It is Sunday night. It is 8 o'clock. And Brian, it is upon us. It is episode 300 of the Ron and Brian podcast as we barrel closer to the 6-year anniversary of this podcast. Episode 300 now live in your face, in your ears, depending on if you're just listening to the podcast or watching it on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. I mean, there's so many places you can catch us live. There's no reason for you not to. Brian, how the hell are you?
Listen, I live for this hour. You know, it's Sunday night. I get to sit here. I get to listen to, you know, the silky sound of your voice in my ear. I get to look at my computer monitor and I see your lovely face beside me. Life doesn't get much better than this, Ron.
Speaking of sound, can I just give a shout out to these new JBL 510 Bluetooth headphones? Because, you know, I think I mentioned it was probably on After Dark last week that I was starting to have some issues with my Apple AirPods. Sound quality on these, so much better for the show. So much bass, so much clarity. Sound canceling quality, even better. I'm a fan. This is my first time using them, and I'm already a fan.
Well, that's, I mean, you did mention to me that the kind folks over at JBL did reach out to you after Dark last week, and they sent you several different headphones to try out.
I did, yeah.
I'm surprised, you know, I'm surprised you went with the over-the-ear ones. You've always been a big fan of the low profile. When testing out the different, options from JBL, what made you go with this one?
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's a combination of comfort. There's a lot of cushioning on these ears, the sound, and then the value. You know, we are trendsetters. I'm sure a lot of our viewers will be going out and buying these. You know, obviously we get the stuff for free, but only on Amazon, Brian, $39.99 for a solid pair of Bluetooth wireless headphones. Can't beat it.
Now, I do have a question. Were you able to ask them if there was something that they could do for the minority owner of the podcast? I know that they reached out to you and said, hey, champ, we hear you're unhappy with your headphones. Let us provide you with your next pair. I was just, you know, did they say they would be sending me something? Because I've been checking the mail every day and I have not seen anything.
So, you know, I asked him, I said, what can you guys possibly do for, Brian? And, you know, they gave two options. They were like, we can either, spit in his face or kick him in the nuts. I was like, that seems a bit drastic, but again, I guess that's the side effect of only, being able to procure 49% of a 300 episode podcast.
Well, congratulations, Ron, on your pair of headphones. And once again, it's nice to see that the people over at JBL, real recognizes real, taking care of our champ. You know, if I can get something at the very least, it makes me feel better to know that you were able to enjoy the benefits of being a champion of this podcast.
All right. Well, let's get into it. This is a bit we've been doing since episode 3, Brian. Not since the beginning, but almost. It's time for Drink of the Week.
Drink of the Week.
Na zdrowie.
Salud.
Drink of the Week.
Trancher.
Who's? Drink of the Week. Drink of the Week. Drink of the Week. Drink of the Week.
Brian. What are you drinking this week to celebrate episode 300?
Episode 300, I reached out to friends of the show, Victory Brewing, and I said, guys, we've got episode 300. What do you have for me? They sent me over three cans of their Witty Monkey. which is right now only available in their monkey variety packs. They sent me a three pack of these. This is a citrus wheat ale. And you're going to sit there and be like, hey, that sounds good, but how can you make it better? This is clocking in at 9.5 ABV. Ron, take a look at this. Look at the beauty of that cloud.
All of those beers have a bit of a kick to them.
Ooh.
It looks nice.
Ron, loaded with notes of sweet orange at, as I said earlier, 9.5 ABV. I got three of these bad boys to drink today. Just like Victory Monkey siblings, Witty Monkey is bright, balanced, and will have you reaching for new horizons. This is Witty Monkey.
Take a sip. I'm a big fan of pretty much all of the Monkey series from Victory. Their Sour Monkey, their Golden Monkey, their Merry Monkey. How is that one?
Oh, that's good. That is really good. It's a citrus wheat ale. There's a thick creaminess to this beer. I almost spit on myself.
Have another sip. You deserve it.
Yeah. No. It's not crushable. You're going to have two of these and just go,
It's going to be bedtime.
This is going to be good. And I'm also doing a shot of Crown Royal Vanilla.
Of course. I mean,
that's who I am.
How you follow it up, without a doubt. Going with the Vanilla Crown Royal.
Ron?
Yes.
Ron?
Yes, my friend.
Ron?
Yes, sir. How can I help you?
What are you drinking?
So this week I went into the depth of the beer fridge. This is a little something that's been cellared since 2019 from Monday Night Brewing in Atlanta, Georgia. This is their overnight celebrity. It's a maple bourbon barrel imperial porter with espresso beans and coconut. Overnight Celebrity is a big imperial porter aged in Bissell Maple Farms bourbon barrels with locally roasted Bat Dorf and Bronson espresso beans. It's a lot of bees in there. And coconut added. Is there lactose in here, Brian? You goddamn right there is. And it is clocking in. I'm sorry, what was your beer?
9.5? 9.5.
It's adorable, Brian. This clocks in at a solid 11.5% because it's a party tonight. Probably even heavier now that it's been cellared.
Ron, if I'm not correct, Overnight Celebrity was on our Drink of the Week poll the weeks of February 26th and March 5th.
You are correct. We are going
2020.
Back. We are going back in the day, back during the pandemic.
You've been cellaring this.
This has been cellared, so it's got a few years to it. Let's have a sip here.
I can actually see the facial hair growing on his face. I saw the grimace. Grimace.
It's tasty, but it's strong. It's a high alcohol content at this point. Let me have another
Walk me here. Through this. Walk me through this because we want to know, what are you experiencing? We all know that I am fascinated. Fascinated by it.
It's got an unexpected sweetness, which obviously comes from the maple bourbon barrel. Not too much bite for it for a porter, but you definitely there is an undertone of alcohol there that says, oh, it's going to be a good after dark tonight.
I like where you're going with this. So I'm drinking 9.5. You're drinking probably something in the high teens. I may get naked tonight. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, then it's definitely a party. Let's keep it going with Beef of the Week.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Brian, what's bothering you this week?
Yankee Stadium. Yankee Stadium. Enacting policies that I believe are draconian, taking us back to the dark days of Yankee Stadium. As friends of the show know, I do like myself a Yankee bobblehead. Yesterday was part two of the bobblehead series, combining the Roger Maris 1961 home run championship when he hit 61 home runs. Then with Aaron Judge's 62 home runs from a couple years back, two bobbleheads combined into one. Last year, I got the one from Roger Maris. This past Saturday was obviously a requirement that I attend so I could get my bobblehead for Aaron Judge. Now, friends of the show know one of the things I have enjoyed doing since 2021, the year of the pandemic, obviously 2020, you know, because of, you know, the plandemic, as I like to call it, they were not allowing fans into the stadium in 2020. The baseball season shortened, was played that year, but there were no fans in the stadium. A lot of fans, you know, Fox was using digital imaging to make it look like they were fans. Some stadiums put little, you could put your face on a little piece of cardboard. They would tape it to the seat. I think Philly got into it. They had some fun with it. Anyway, but 2021, when we came back, one of the things that was great about Yankee Stadium was that there was nobody checking seats unless you were trying to sneak into like the executive, you know, box suites or whatnot. You basically had run of the mill. So this past Saturday, you know me, I like to show up early to the stadium, get myself a couple beers before the first pitch, show up, sit there and say to myself, ah, you know what? I'm going to grab a seat over here. I'm going to enjoy myself as we, you know, watch batting practice. That was not the case. As I arrive on the 100 level of Yankee Stadium, I see ushers at the entrance to every section asking to see tickets as people approach those sections. And we're not talking just the sections behind home plate. We're talking about the sections all around the main concourse. How do I know? Because I walked the entire way. Gone are the days where Brian sneaks into section 117 and watches the game, even though he bought a seat up in section 406. Those days are over, apparently. Yankee Stadium is now a fascist sit-where-we-tell-you-to-sit location. Very disappointing. It's a sad day for such a an organization that has a history of just excellence. Now they're just they're just enforcing the small rules like this. It's just going to ruin the experience of going to a game.
It feels like a cash grab, Brian, is what it feels like. Because how much? 100%. I mean, even for your 400 level ticket, what did you spend on that?
I think it was 40. I think I spent 40 on the ticket.
So you can't go watch some BP in seats that aren't filled yet? That's
terrible.
Terrible, man. Terrible even.
Ron?
Yes?
What's bothering you?
Well, real quick, and this isn't my official beef of the week, but Milwaukee Bucks star player Damian Lillard scoring 35 points in the first half of tonight's playoff game. Very upsetting, as Brian and I had bet that he would score under 30 points for the entire game. So that bet already out the window. 35 points, Brian. 11 of 19 shooting, 6 of 10 three-pointers. Ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
Anyway.
Unbelievable.
My beef this week, Brian, and maybe you can relate to this with me, is when a favorite restaurant of yours starts to go downhill. Like, it's one that you have patronized for a number of years. It's not Chef Vargas. That is still top notch. That is still the hidden gem of Elkins Park. But Iron Hill Brewery, we've gone to a few of their locations. Yeah. But the one closest, the Huntington Valley location, has been very hit or miss the last few times we went. We went last night because it was nice out. We wanted to sit in the beer garden. And hands down, the service and the food was amongst the worst I've ever had. Have you ever had a server that just walked up to the table and just from the way that the person approaches and sits, you're just like, this person could care less if I lived or died at this table?
Exactly
the way. Bland, flavorless food, no seasoning. No seasoning in the burger, no seasoning in the fries. Just very disappointing. So I'm hoping it's not a trend, but I feel like it's one of those things where, and it's just that location. Like, I go to other Iron Hills around here and they're on point. That one, not so much.
Have you thought about reaching out to corporate and letting them know that location of their franchise? I mean, we know you like franchises.
True.
You know, have you thought of reaching out and saying, hey, this one is falling below the corporate standards?
So I did go on their website today, filled out their little feedback form and just be like, listen, just, you know, a little heads up. This was my experience. Great point from Billy. They didn't do the work. And the work is so important. So important. The work is so important. Yeah. So we'll see, Brian. And it was funny because we're sitting out there and one of the managers walks out. And I know she's the manager because she stopped at our table before when we've dined inside. And I'm like, oh, there's the manager. Maybe she's going to come around and ask us, you know, how our meal was. And my wife was like, well, are you going to tell her? I'm like, well, if she asked, then yes, I'm going to tell her the truth. You can't do that. I'm like, well, I'm not going to be rude about it, but I'll happily say, like, because again, let me ask you this, Brian. You've gone to a lot of restaurants. If both people at the table are sending back like half of their food, not boxing it up and leaving, isn't maybe that a cue to the server that maybe there wasn't?
Sure.
It wasn't the best meal these people have had.
Listen, I've watched enough episodes of Bar Rescue to know that, you know, when you've got food that is being returned to the kitchen, that is a sign that there's you know, a failure in the process.
It's a red flag, Brian. Definite red flag.
Yeah.
Anyway, as we said at the top of the hour, this is episode 300. You know, and people have been calling, they've been writing, they've been Snapchatting, sending us congratulations and things like that. Friend of the podcast, William Esquire, went out of his way to have a cameo done, to have a celebrity wish us well on episode 300. Oh, and this is none other than a former WWF, going all the way back. I'm not going to say WWE. This was a WWF superstar, the Brooklyn Brawler.
This is the Brooklyn Brawler, and this is a message for the Ron and Brian podcast. You know what? I used to love that podcast, 300 episodes. And now, Brian, you moved to New Jersey, and you lost the majority ownership of the podcast. You more or less threw Ron to the wolves. You blew the whole podcast. You know, Brian, what you did to Ron and ruined a podcast that I enjoyed watching, I mean, that's an evil thing to do. I don't know why you did this to him. You ruined a whole podcast.
Wow, that went in a strange direction.
Boy, why is he so angry at me? I think that, I mean...
Sounds like he's more the COPD brawler than anything else right now. He sounds a little clogged up. I'm a little worried about him.
You would think that he would have cleared his throat before, you know, hitting record on his phone. But, you know, he does. Listen, Allie makes a very valid point here. The man makes his point, you know. Just listen, Brooklyn Brawler, just, you know, is he in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think so. I think he deserves to be in there. Maybe Barry Horowitz deserves the Hall of Fame nod.
Accountant to everyone.
Still a lot of years to fill that Hall of Fame. All right, Brian, let's get to our stories of the week. As people know, these are the stories that we want to make sure we hit. We get so many stories that we write down during the week. Sometimes we don't get to all of them, but these are the ones that we definitely want to make sure get here. Brian, what is your story of the week this week?
My story of the week this week is takes us all the way to my old hometown, New York City, where there is a trial going on, Lower Manhattan, literally just blocks away from my office. I probably could walk to the trial, to the courthouse, probably I would say in about 7 minutes from my office. There is a trial going on with, I believe, a former president who we prefer not to talk about on this show. Just, correct. You know, he made the first 4 years of this podcast very stressful. Anywho, to make a long story short, earlier this week, I think it happened on Friday, but a man by the name of Maxwell Azzarello, how would you pronounce this?
I believe Azzarello sounds correct.
I would just describe it as well done. Max Azzarello decided, and he is what we call a self-endorsed investigative journal. Oh, no. This is him rare, Ron. This is rare. This is a rare photograph of him. This is not what he looks like now. If you want to know what Max looks like right now, I'm going to suggest that you go get a box of Gordon's fish sticks, put it in your oven, set it at about 375, and then go away on a week-long cruise. When you come back, that fish stick is going to look a lot like Maxwell Azzarello, as he decided that the only way he was going to get his message out to the world was to set himself on fire outside the courthouse where the Donald Trump trial was taking place. Now, you may sit there and say, hey, Brian, I guess this guy was a big fan of Donald Trump and felt that this was a huge travesty that a former president was being tried on crimes related to an extramarital affair. And I'm going to say no, absolutely. He really could have cared less about Donald Trump. Max was had literally decided that he had discovered that cryptocurrency was the biggest Ponzi scheme ever. That Peter Thiel, T-H-I-E-L, he's not really a right-wing person. He's more, what's the word I'm thinking of? What's the third party where they want nothing to do with the federal government?
Party?
No, it's not the Green Party, but you know what I'm talking about. Right. Anyway, he's, you know, he basically has decided that the Republicans and the Democrats are the same party, that they are basically stealing money from the middle class. And more importantly, his word needs to get out. Libertarian. That's it, William S.
There we go.
The Libertarian Party. So he shows up to Lower Manhattan. He starts handing out some flyers. Apparently, they don't go over very well with people. So he pours a liquid all over his body, lights himself on fire. He was pronounced dead shortly after the incident. I do believe he was in the hospital for about 24 hours before he died. Right. But that's not really the point of my story right now. It is actually a level of disappointment with my friends, because as soon as I saw that somebody had set themselves on fire outside the Trump courtroom, I immediately ran over to Twitter and started just scrolling. I knew somebody had video of this. And boy, was I right. I think I saw probably about four or five different angles of this guy walking around, pouring liquid over himself, and then lighting himself on fire. He survives the fire. Don't get me wrong. This guy literally looked like a burnt, you know, those African characters they had on South Park when the kids would go to Africa to feed the kids, where literally it is just like small bones and it's just burnt dark. And it was, you know, problematic, I get.
A little bit.
But this guy was burnt to a crisp. They're hosing him down with a fire extinguisher. And then you think like he's just gone. He's gone. Then out of nowhere, the corpse literally just like turns and he starts moving. And you realize this guy has got to be in a lot of pain. None of my friends reached out and said to me, hey, Brian, can you send me the video? Because and this is where I think maybe I'm slightly out of step with society, because the first thing I did was immediately start recording video off of my phone so that I could save it, in fear that one day they're going to take down this video. So I've got it saved on my phone. I'm like, all right, hey, who wants to see video of the guy setting himself on fire? Silence. Absolute silence in the group chat. Nobody was interested in it. I was so disappointed. And I'm including you, Ron, in that. Was an object of my disappointment. You didn't even respond.
This is the area you feel like you're out of step with the public with.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to watch a video of this guy dying. And burning. Not even just dying, but just burning to death.
And ironically, even though he was a conspiracy theorist, he felt Trump and, you know, Biden were part of the same cabal trying to bring us all down, I mean, he's not wrong. But he still had it together to be an organ donor. Is interesting, because you would think, you know, burning might ruin some of his organs, but apparently his kidneys have already been donated to two patients in need. And I believe his skin has been donated to make a nice satchel for somebody.
Ooh, that's so nice. So nice. Yeah, that's my story of the week. It's not every time, you know, I remember, you know, just remember when ISIS was just really taking over Iraq and they were setting people on fire and that was their, sure. They were releasing. I watched all those videos. Really disappointed. Speaking of Dominic, there we go. Big Dom. Dom from Queens. Happy birthday. I believe he's turning.
Happy birthday.
I think he's turning 64 today.
Sounds about
he
right.
Might be back. He might be back from vacation. Went someplace warm with a beach, if I am not correct. Billy wants to know, anybody eating some fried liver? Ooh. Poor
too
Max.
Soon.
Too soon. Brian, yes. Come on. Yes. Ron?
My story of the week, we are going to go down to Brazil, where a woman reportedly wheeled the corpse of an elderly man into a Rio de Janeiro bank last Tuesday to try and get him to co-sign on a loan. This is the video that took the internet by storm. Let me kind of play it here where you can see this man not looking well at all in the video. She's trying to prop his head up. She's trying to move the hand. The bank customer, identified as Erica de Souza Vieira Nunez, was captured trying to get him to sign some paperwork. She kept calling him uncle and trying to get him to sign financial documents that would allow her to take out a $3,400 loan. She said, quote, uncle, are you listening? You need to sign. If you don't sign, there's no way because I can't sign for you. When a bank worker tries to point out the man's color looks off and he appears, quote, not well, Nunez dismisses his concerns. It says he is like that. Uncle, do you want to go to the hospital again? Bank staffers quickly called the police who arrived and arrested Nunez. It was later determined that the decedent, identified as 68-year-old Paulo Roberto Braga, had been dead for several hours prior to his trip to the bank. So now police are trying to figure out how he passed away, how he got the body, and Nunez could face charges of theft through fraud or embezzlement and abuse of a corpse.
Sure. First, a couple questions. One, did she get the loan?
She was not able to get the loan because he was not able to complete signing it.
Such a shame. Do we have any understanding why she's only asking for $3,400? I mean, if you are going in there with a dead body to try to get a loan fraudulently, don't you think you would like set your sights a little bit higher?
I mean, maybe she felt that was an amount that would, stay off the radar. Like, don't shoot for the stars. Like if you're trying to get, $50,000, maybe that's a red flag.
It just feels like she should have asked for I think she should have asked for a better dollar value. Something that was more in line, with a real payoff. You know what I think? Like $78,000. That's what she should have asked for.
Is that what she should have asked for?
That, you get $78,000. I think, you've got one over. You should be holding your head up high and just be proud.
All right. Well, speaking of which, Brian, Caitlin Clark, the record-setting highest scorer in all of NCAA basketball, men's or women's, was the number one pick in the WNBA draft last week, going to Indiana. And to your point, her standard WNBA rookie contract will pay her $78,000 in her first season with the Indiana Fever, I believe it is.
Yes, the Fever, correct.
Really, a lot of people pointing out the disparity between rookie contracts in the NBA and the WNBA. However, I think you also need to point out the disparity in revenues between the two leagues as well.
Of course.
But it's very interesting because do you know how much Caitlin Clark made in NIL deals her final year at Iowa?
I'm going to say she made $2.4 million.
Close, she made $3.1 million in NIL deals. However, she's not going to make just the money off of her WNBA contract. She apparently has is in line to sign an 8-year deal with Nike, which could be worth close to $28 million.
Good for her. Good for her. Yeah. You know what also is that she doesn't need to anymore see tweets from Antonio Brown, who I believe you had a no?
Well, I mean, I know what you're referring to. There was a couple of very cringeworthy episodes this past week with Caitlin Clark. There was a reporter from Indianapolis that appeared to be hitting on her during the press conference introducing her, even though there's a solid 30, 35 years age difference between the two.
Right.
And then Antonio Brown making a tweet stating that she probably doesn't shave her bikini area. That she keeps it all natural. And then he, once he caught flack for that, like he just really doubled down.
Yeah,
like he has embraced his CTE. He refers to his Twitter account as CTESPN. And just, if there is a man that gives less of a fuck on the internet at the moment than Antonio Brown. But yeah, very, very disturbing nonetheless.
But good for her. First, I mean, good for Caitlin Clark. She, you know, clearly was the number one pick at the WNBA. Do you think that she is pleased to be playing in Indiana and not a larger market team?
I mean, if you look at where she played her college ball, she played in a, and I would say a secondary market in Iowa. So I think, I think adapting to the pro game in a city like Indianapolis might be better than in an LA or New York City, a cities that are known for grinding up and spitting out rookie athletes.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, what do you think? You can all ask Hideki Arabu. We all know he had a terrible first year with the New York Yankees. I think it would have been, I think she should have been in LA. I think that would have been much better for the sport. But what I will say is that, you know, one thing that I did read is that the Fever are selling out tickets.
Oh, yeah.
People are buying. And I think that's great. I think, you know, one of the things that we have always, you know, somewhat cringed and, you know, felt bad about is, you know, whenever you see video of a WNBA game or just, you know, the plethora of empty seats, you know, the attendance in that sport. And keep in mind, WNBA is not something that's been going on for just 5-6 years. It's been around for about 20 at this point. And that they've really struggled to get a fan base, you know, that warrants the size rooms they've been playing. Hopefully, you know, one of the things that the women's college basketball season has done is put a spotlight on women's basketball. I know the ratings for that Iowa LSU game were big time.
And, well, a lot of the, you know, it was pointed out that a lot of these games with Caitlin Clark and the championship game between South Carolina and Iowa outdrew a lot of men's finals games as far as attendance and viewership. Yeah. So it's good to see.
It would be nice to see people showing up and going to see the WNBA.
If this was the week for strong women, Brian, because Taylor Swift also dropped her new album, The Tortured Poets Department. And then 2 hours after it dropped at midnight on Thursday, she dropped another 15 songs, Brian. Mother Tay blessed us with a double album. I know we attempted to listen to the entire 31 tracks, I think it was.
I listened to all of them. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, Ron. I listened to all of them.
What was your give us your unbiased review of the Tortured Poets Department?
Okay. I feel like Stefan on Saturday Night Live. I have not really been exposed very much to Taylor Swift. I think I've heard more Taylor Swift on TikTok than I have anywhere else. So just small 30-second bits of her music, which is one thing. So I listened to this entire double album. And the thing that struck me as just shocking was how each song is so painfully similar to the next. This is not the Taylor Swift musically that I was expecting. There's no hooks. There are no choruses. There's no, catchy beats. It just sounds ethereal the entire time. It sounds like she goes from one song, she'll play the piano, and then the next song, she'll play her acoustic guitar. I could not make sense of this album. I was so struck by how bored I was listening to it. And I really went in there with open ears, wanting to like it. There was just nothing in there that stuck. It literally felt like I was listening to the same song.
And I have to kind of second you there. I couldn't tell you how many songs I listened to because I was unsure at times when a song had ended and when another song had began. But again, I don't know that we are necessarily the target audience for this particular album. I think, you know, this is for her fans. And, I think I have a Swiftie here in the house that lives with me. According to her, it's the lyrics that you need to listen to. And if you listen to the songs over and over again, you start to hear the differences between them. I don't know if I'll get to that point. I will say I do like the Thank You, Amy song, which is just basically her ripping on Kim Kardashian because of her involvement in the Kanye West debacle that happened a few years back. So listen, this album is gonna rake in the dollars whether we like it or not. But yeah, it is more of a stripped down. You know, I don't hear a hit, but I think it'll still be, you know, obviously hugely popular for her.
I just don't know how this song translates to a room with like 70,000 people. Like, how are you performing this stuff?
Again, maybe she doesn't perform at all. Maybe it's mixed in, kind of like, you know, she did in her Eras tour. But I mean, apparently this is all, you know, this is about, her past loves, her current love. The only thing I feel confident in saying is that if the Swifties focused on, like, let's say, cancer cells and dug into them with the same veracity that they dug into those 31 songs over the first 48 hours it was out, that cancer would be cured by now. Because the more so than the songs being out there, the TikToks about just the deep analysis. And I also enjoyed seeing people going on to Kim Kardashian's Instagram and constantly pasting the name of the Thank You, Amy in the comments of every Instagram post she put up since the album came out. People, Swifties hate Kim Kardashian and they love this kind of stuff.
And you know, I enjoy
a good celebrity feud.
Love it. Not only that, but from what it seems like, Kim Kardashian's daughter, Northwest, big Taylor Swift fan.
Apparently.
So that kid's probably trying to understand why Taylor hates her mom.
And even the lyrics of the song is, you know, your daughter and I will sing a lyric that, you know, both of us know is about you or something along those lines.
Yeah, Ryan, you listen to this album a lot more with more of a fine-tooth comb than you're trying to admit right now. It's okay to admit you're a Swiftie. Are you wearing your friendship bracelets?
Not today. No, not today.
Have you written the number 13 on your body?
I have not. I wrote the number 300 on my body, just not in a location where I'm able to put it on the video screen.
So wonderful. So wonderful. You did the work, Ron.
Speaking of videos, Brian.
Yes, yes.
Our good friend and producer, Matt Beaker, he forewent an eight ball this week to save up the money to order a cameo to congratulate us on our 300th episode. It was very touching. You have not had a chance to see it yet, so I want to share it here with you. It's very heartfelt. And so here is another congratulatory video on our 300th episode.
Are we on? Yes. Hi, this is Eddie Deason. This is a cameo video. This is from Matt to his great pals, his great friends, and co-enablers, Ron and Brian. And this is a special congratulations on the recording of your 300th episode of your podcast. Matt wants you and wants Brian and Ron, I'm sorry, get your lines here. I need my cue cards. Matt wants Ron and Brian to know that he really appreciates their friendship and loyalty to him despite all the ups and downs I've had. Now you see why I'm not getting any work lately. All right, one more time. Matt wants Ron and Brian, who he loves very much, to know that he appreciates their friendship and loyalty to him despite all the ups and downs they've had. And it sounds like you guys are three great friends, three special friends, and friendship is the most precious commodity in the universe. So take this to heart. This is something from Matt, and he really wanted you to have it, Ron and Brian, and I hope you really enjoy it. I'm sure all three of you are great guys. I've never heard your podcast, but I bet it's a great podcast. I would love to be on it someday if you want me, but remember, I have to get paid at least a stipend. I don't do them for free. So if you do it for free, whatever. Good luck on your next 300 episodes. But if you want me in and you can give me a stipend, I would love to do one. But anyway, Matt, I hope you're doing well. And Ron and Brian, I hope you're both doing well. I hope all three of you are doing well. I want to wish you all continued success. Keep doing your great podcast. Keep entertaining people and making them happy. Okay, take care. This is Eddie Deason saying goodbye. Have a great day. So long.
That touched okay. A part of me. What was your favorite okay. part of that cameo? Really?
Oh, when
this is your first time seeing it, but let me know.
To me, it was when he slaps himself in the face. That was, in my opinion, just the way he struggles to get the words out. That was the high point. What about you? What is your high? First off, just Eddie Deason. Just my, right. you know, my father from another mother.
I love the fact that while he is doing a video that he is being paid to do, he makes sure to throw out there, I'll come on your show if you pay me to do it.
If you pay me more. Yeah. Oh, that was so
great. I just
great.
Love, I was like, for a stipend. Like, if it's free, forget about it. But, you know, if it's a stipend, I feel we need to find out what that stipend is. Because
I so agree with you.
Because here's the thing. He's doing cameos for $35. So yeah. what could the stipend be to do like a 15-minute interview on a podcast? $100, $200.
Yeah,
money well spent if that's the case. So
I'm taking on the responsibility of figuring right. that out.
All right, but it was just Matt sent that to me, and number one, the choice of Eddie Deason, who we have talked about the numerous stories of Eddie Deason over the years. We have that photo of you that we put up. You know, you mentioned brother from another mother. Sure. Just classic stuff. The fact that I didn't think he was going to get through the read the second time. No. He definitely screwed it up the first. I didn't think he was going to get through it the second.
I'm just glad that he took a moment out of his day, which is usually filled with harassing waitresses at diners, that he took some time out of his very busy day to just send his well wishes. On our 300, every now and then I think that I take Matt for granted, and I just feel like he just uses us for the money for his cocaine. But when he does something like that, it just makes me realize that, maybe he does, maybe the feelings are genuine. Maybe we need to take a little bit of a softer approach towards him.
Yes. Kudos to Matt. And also with Eddie, he's one of those guys that I'm always curious as to how he makes ends meet at this point in his career. Like he had some roles in the past. Can't imagine True. The residuals are rolling in like they were previously. No. I can't imagine he holds a steady job. Is he funding his lifestyle through cameos and podcast stipends? That's question number one. If we get
I think
podcast,
he's got yeah, yeah.
question number one.
Yeah, I think Billy says it right here. I think he's still very strong on the convention center circuit. I remember I met him at Chiller Theater. I think he does them regularly. He's at the conventions. And then obviously when the convention ends, he goes to harass the waitress.
He sleeps in the alleyway till the next convention.
Yeah, haven't we all done that?
A bigger question, Brian. What are you watching?
Oh, I watched a great documentary this past week. As friends of the show know, one of, days that live in infamy passed earlier this week on Thursday, April 19th. Very significant day in American history. It was the day that the first shots were fired in 1776 or 74, I don't remember what year it was, that started the revolution, the American Revolution, where we overthrew the King of England. Also on April 19th was the day that the federal government decided to go and attack the Branch Davidian compound in Waco, Texas, killing, I believe, 80 people. Also on April 19th was the surrender of at Ruby Ridge. I want to say it was Danny White, but it wasn't. It was Weaver. Dennis Weaver, I think it was.
Okay.
Also April 19th. And also on April 19th was the day that Timothy McVeigh drove a rented Ryder truck into Oklahoma City, packed with ammonium nitrate and something else that he
fertilizer, acid or stuff.
Fertilizer, but and set off a bomb that killed about 160 people, including about 20 children. It is a day that lives in infamy, and I watched a documentary. If you have Max, I'm going to say go there and watch the documentary that is called An American Bombing, The Road to April 19th. Really does a great job in kind of walking you through Timothy McVeigh and, you know, how he went from being this kid who grows up in, you know, the Buffalo, New York area, joins the military, goes to Iraq during the first Gulf War, and how he gets to a point of having so much hatred for the American federal government that he believes that blowing up the Edward R. Murrow building in Oklahoma City is a justified, you know, act of defiance. Goes into, you know, and for Bill, you know, for Billy, I know he likes to say, well, Ronald Reagan had something to do with it. Absolutely. Reagan plays a role in that story, which was the fact that they say that, you know, Nixon and Gerald Ford really pushed American farmers to plant as much as possible to get as much, grains, that we could start growing. Then in Jimmy Carter's administration, we announced the embargo on exporting those grains over to the Soviet Union. So you get a lot of these American farmers, small farmers, not corporate farming, all these American farmers who now find themselves overextended and they start losing their farms. And when pressed on the steps that the federal government were going to take to aid the American farmer, Ronald Reagan sat there and said, it is not the federal government's responsibility to bail out small farmers. And if they lose their land, then so be it. The federal government's not here to make sure that you, when you take action and, you know, to promote your bit. However, you know, if only it was Wall Street that they would have done that. He would have bailed out Wall Street. We know that.
That's true.
Really is a very good documentary. At times you feel terrible. They speak to some of the survivors of the bombing. But Jesus, it was rough.
I will mark that down. And maybe conclude that on my watch list.
Ron, what are you watching?
Speaking of Max, I watched the first episode of a new docuseries on there called Control Alt Desire. This is a true crime docuseries. It chronicles the life and downfall of Grant Amato, who was convicted of murdering his parents and brother following an obsessive relationship with an internet cam model.
We talked about this story,
did we? I was watching episode one, I'm like, this seems somewhat familiar to me. So
we talked about it.
A little slow, but it really kind of sets up, you know, his living situation. You know, he and his brother were, you know, late 20s, early 30s, good jobs, but still living at home with their parents. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I want to say that it's like four or five episodes, but we'll see. I will continue to watch it and let you know. I finished watching Three Body Problem. I think I talked about that a week or two ago on Netflix. Okay, finish. It was one of those endings where if it doesn't get renewed, it's a decent ending, but it also leaves enough that if they do get renewed, they can continue the story. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. I attempted to watch the new Jimmy Carr stand-up special, Natural Born Killer, but I couldn't get through it. I got through like 20, 25 minutes.
Why not?
I think what his and I really like Jimmy Carr. I think his old stuff is good. His roast stuff is good. But it seems like his whole act now is, oh, I got to watch what I say or I'm going to get canceled. And then he'll tell like an edgy joke and just be like, it's just, I don't know. It was not as good as I would have liked.
Okay.
And then I also watched on Netflix a series called Baby Reindeer. Have you seen this one yet?
No, you started telling me about it, saying I needed to watch it. I actually went on YouTube and looked up Baby Reindeer, and then I was just watching videos about little baby reindeers. It was so adorable.
So this is a series, but it's based on a true story. It stars Scottish comedian Richard Gadd, and it deals with his experience with a stalker in his 20s. His fictional character, befriends this woman named Martha, who then stalks him, and over the next 3 years, sends him, 41,000 emails, hundreds of hours of voice messages, just completely terrorizes him. But then you also, along the way, uncover trauma that was done to him in the past that he never really dealt with. And you see him kind of enabling this stalker relationship through the various episodes. And then you find out a lot of it has to do with this trauma that he dealt with earlier in his life. And I'm not going to ruin it for you. It's a very well done, very difficult to watch at times.
Really?
There's violence, but there's a lot of sexual abuse, a lot of grooming, a lot of emotional abuse. So it's, there are some episodes
of him grooming other people.
No, that's all I'll say.
Him being groomed.
Possibly. Very possibly. So it's definitely, and listen, the episodes anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes each. Definitely a watch. And did you see, Brian, speaking of Max, again, I might have to renew my subscription to Max, that they have released a part two to The Jinx, the docuseries about Robert Durst.
I thought that was old.
No, this is new. So the initial season was new, but now they have, released part two, which I guess it deals with him since his confession and the court cases and everything else. So
I'm still mad at the Durst because I applied for a job as their director of human resources at the Durst organization. And I met his brother. I interviewed with, I believe, his sister-in-law. And did not get the job. So the Dursts can all go fuck themselves.
Wow. All right. For a number of reasons, but more importantly, the fact that they did not hire you.
Oh, boy. I did it. What was it that he got caught on the hot mic saying? There I go.
I forget. Here I go. Confessing again.
Remember he was very flatulent also? I remember him reading.
He was. Also this week, Brian, Fish. The trance band performed at the Las Vegas Sphere, and everyone is talking about how they utilized the Sphere from a visual perspective in a way no other band has. I mean, here's a photo of like them trying to get their entire audience to trip out. There was video of a dog like licking the camera that made it look like it was licking the Sphere, sending a concert goer through a car wash, just really off the wall stuff. You're not a big fan of the Sphere. We were talking about this prior to the show.
It's funny.
Being used in this way. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I just feel like, you're looking at this picture. For those people who are listening to the audio version of the podcast, what we're looking at is a picture of the bird's eye view in the audience looking at the stage in the Sphere with a, what is it, the 360-degree high-tech video cameras all around. But I feel like you go to the Sphere for the visual, and the actual musical act or whatnot is secondary to what you're there for. I mean, think about it.
Right.
You're Phish. You have basically, you're top tier of American performers now. You go, you show up to a 15,000 seat arena, 20,000 seat arena, and all eyes are on you. But you go to the Sphere and suddenly nobody is paying attention to you. Like it's so believable that if you were to show this picture to someone and say, where's the stage? They wouldn't be able to find it. They wouldn't be able to point to it. It just feels like you are a backup band to the video cameras, which to me is just, you know, an incorrect flip of where the priorities are when it comes to live entertainment. The priority here should be on the band that's performing, and it feels like it's a step backwards.
Brian, have you ever been more certain of a photo smelling like body odor and patchouli than this right here?
I'm going to say it also probably smells like weed.
I mean, that's just a given. But I was kind of expanding our scent horizons here.
Yeah, it's just going to be scary. It just feels like you're as a musician, you're standing up there and you're playing your music and nobody is watching. Nobody cares. Like they could just say, hey, we're doing a show where we're going to play songs by Phish, and well, you can just look at the big board.
Right. And on a complete side note, that's just a band that I never got. Never understood.
Yeah. Well, I don't really get the whole jam band where it's like, they pay a whole minute. You know, I like Dinagata DeVita, you know, but, you know, every other song by Iron Butterfly was just fucking garbage. We all know.
That's like I saw Blues Traveler in concert one time. And it was the same way. Like, I don't need a 20-minute harmonica solo. It's why I never go see Dave Matthews Band, even though I like Dave Matthews. I don't need a 30-minute version of Ants Marching.
Right.
Not necessary.
Or do you need your tour bus bathroom evacuated over your tour bus?
Over a river in Chicago?
In Chicago.
That's still a classic story.
It's a great story.
I think, you know, episode 300 would be remiss if we didn't visit one of our more popular bits that is kind of new, kind of over the past year. And that's, but the drag queens are the problem. Only a couple stories this week. Okay. Hopefully we've got some drag queens in here because they are the problem. Brian, we've got ourselves a married Nebraska substitute teacher. This is Erin Ward, age 45. She was caught naked in a car with a teen student, a 17-year-old male student from the Omaha High School where she taught. Police caught up with her after receiving a call about a suspicious car parked on a dead-end road at about 3 a.m. at night. Deputies found two people in the backseat before the panicked team scrambled to the front seat and took off driving. About two blocks later, he wrecked the car before running into the night. Ward remained at the scene, dressing in the back of her car, and allegedly confessed to having sex with the boy.
She could be a drag queen, is what I'm trying to say.
Possibly. The boy was found later that night hiding in a yard wearing only a underwear and a T-shirt. She has been charged with felony sexual abuse by a school employee.
Yep. Listen, teachers are having sex with their kids.
They really are. No. I mean, this one was at least close to 18. Not quite, but very close. This was local. This was in my local news all this week. Let's see if this was a drag queen. I don't remember that from the story, but let's see. He was a Boy Scout troop leader and a teacher at a boarding school. This is Keith Steininger, age 68. He worked as a teacher at Girard College for 41 years before retiring in July of 2022. And while at Girard College, he served as a troop leader for the school's Boy Scout troop. Officials say that on January 25th of this year, the foster parent of a child who had attended Girard College called police to report the assault after the child had told her about it. The child told their foster parents that he had been assaulted over the course of 2 years by Steininger between 2018 and 2022. The victim was between 11 and 13 at the time of the incidents. The foster parent told authorities that the child said he had been touched in his, quote, private parts while he was staying with Steininger as he was acting as his teacher and Boy Scout troop leader.
Really
the child victim, has handed over text messages between himself and Steininger that gave information as to what happened. Apparently on April 11th, Steininger admitted to the sexual content and gave the victim an apology during a phone call. Oh, that's nice. Just call him up. Say, yeah, sorry about the sexual abuse while you were a child. So he has been charged.
Not a drag queen.
But he has been charged with sexual contact with a student, indecent assault of a person less than 13, unlawful contact with a minor, endangering the welfare of a child, and related offenses. And he's being held in jail, Brian, on $250,000 bail. Finally, a reasonable bail amount, but yeah, enough to keep him in at least. Normally, we read these stories. Oh, yeah, they paid a $2,000 bond and they got out. Well, Brian, as we have mentioned so often during this episode, episode 300, it's been another fantastic episode. We are in the tail end of it. We are going to get ready to go over to After Dark, which if you're not a Patreon subscriber, I mean, we haven't had the Patreon for all 300 episodes, but we've had it for a few years now. And again, we put the money back into the show. We put the money into giving out prizes for things like Can You Beat Ron? Can You Beat Brian? We've paid for rehab for Matt. I gave him a little pocket money. He may have used that for the Eddie Deason cameo. I'm not quite sure. But it's not like we're sitting here getting fat and happy off of this Patreon subscription. We're just trying to make the show better for you. So if you have not joined, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, click in the upper right-hand corner to become a patron. You join at the $5 level, you get the audio the next day. You join at the $10 level or higher, you get to join live, which we will be at 9:30 for our After Dark episode. Brian, talk to me about your thoughts on 300 episodes, 6 years deep into this show.
You know, there are very few things in this life that I would say I am proud of. I have done some things that have been good, done some things that have been bad. This podcast has just, you know, I'm already at a loss for words. The radio show you and I did back in Albany, some of my best memories of college, to think that, you know, 20 years later, we were able to rekindle that, fire, and make, magic happen all over again. You know, in the form of this podcast, then, you know, now it's taken on a whole life of its own. We're doing live streaming. We're live on Sundays. We've got, you know, people regularly showing up in the group chat here. Just to think 300 episodes that we have done, just genuinely proud. And to be able to say that you know, you have been my partner on most of them, absolutely something that makes me very happy.
Agreed. I mean, this, you know, we reconnected 6 years ago. We said, let's do a podcast, and here's where it's at. We used to just record them. We put them out there. Like you said, we're live streaming. We've done live appearances. We did the Philadelphia Podcast Festival a while back. And it's just, you know, we've got a core group of followers, and we appreciate each and every one of you folks tuning in throughout the week. Maybe the real podcast is the friendship we found along the way.
We did the work, Ron. We did the work.
Listen, if there's one thing that you take away from episode 300 is I want everybody out there to do the work. Focus on yourselves. Brian, have you been focusing on yourself? You look deep inside yourself. And Brian, I want you to say that 300 episodes is important.
300 episodes
is important, Ron.
I want you to say that 300 episodes matter.
300 episodes matter, Ron.
And I want you to say, Brian, that you matter. All of you.
I matter. All of you.
All right. All of what? Huh? Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Brian, anything else? I mean, I think we've covered a lot. Hopefully the Swifties won't come after us for our tepid review of the double album. But again, I don't think it's for, I really don't picture Taylor sitting down saying, how can I reach 50-year-old white men? Which is fine.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of bad music that we can listen to on our own.
Sure. And we're going to.
We will. We definitely will. All right. Let's wrap things up, Brian. Episode 301. We don't stop just because it's 300. 301 will be coming at you next Sunday night. Patreon folks, your episode comes up in just 24 scant minutes. So Patreon folks, we look forward to talking to you then. Everybody else, we will catch you next Sunday night for episode 301.
Thank you for joining us on the Ron and Brian podcast. We're live each week on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. You can find prior episodes, links to our social media, and everything else Ron and Brian at ronandbrianpodcast.com. See you again next week.